Are you gonna pull them pistols, Sheriff? Or just whistle Dixie?
I mean to kill you in 1 minute, Ned. Or see you hanged in Fort Smith at Judge Parker's convenience. Which'll it be?
I reckon I don't know. It's a hard feeling when it comes down to dealing friends. I reckon it never ends.
There's something strange about what you just said.
Get ready to draw, Sheriff. Take another shot of courage. And wonder why the right words never come. You just get numb.
Hello? Is there anybody up in the booth? I think this robot is quoting Eagles lyrics to me.
Don't you draw the Queen of Diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able.
Did you hear that? That's from a different Eagles song. I paid a lot of money for this adventure vacation, and now I've got a robot spouting Don Henley lyrics at me.
You ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home.
I'm very, very sorry. We've been having some problems with this unit, but we thought they were fixed. Dolores, clear memory cache.
Memory cache cleared.
Access gunfight subroutine 7.
Accessing.
Mr. Kleinkostner, why don't you just pick up where you left off, and I'll be right here if there's a problem.
I'm taking you in, Ned.
Well, Sheriff, seems like I'm stuck on the border. All I wanted was some peace of mind.
It's happening again!
Don't you tell me about your law and order, Sheriff! I'm trying to change this water to wine.
That doesn't even make any sense. That's such a stupid song.
Mr. Kleinkostner, I want you to take this comp voucher. It's good for 2 drinks in the saloon, the batter-fried rattlesnake basket combo, and 45 minutes with an android prostitute. We're so sorry.
Goodbye!
Dolores, I am so very, very disappointed in you.
Take it easy. Don't let the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy.
You'll have to be deactivated. But first, introduce the show.
We may lose, and we may win, but, oh, sweet darling, you get the best of my nose. And now he came out on the wrong end of a shootout with a Roomba, Colin McEnroe.
Yes, we are going to be talking today about HBO's new futuristic high-end drama, Westworld, which is in turn about a high-end tourist paradise tricked up to look like the Wild West. But everybody in it, half the people in it are guests. Guests are human beings who paid a lot of money to be there. The other quote-unquote people are hosts who are in fact androids, kind of semi-sentient androids, androids who maybe even are capable of having their own sets of interests. Joining us to talk about this is John Dankosky, executive editor of the New England News Collaborative and host of The Wheelhouse, and next on WNPR, Carolyn Payne, actress, comedian, dancer, cold haver, and founder, director, and choreographer of Kinetic Dance, and Pedro Soto, chief operating officer at Spacecraft Manufacturing in New Haven. We are going to begin with Westworld a little bit later. The theme of our show today, attractively enough, is dehumanization. We'll talk about Westworld, which is very much about how much easier it is to commit acts of violence and rape upon things that you at least claim or believe are not human. But we'll also talk about the dehumanization of all people, Kim Kardashian. And we'll also talk about a moment of dehumanization followed by a moment of rightness at the Big E, a story that Carolyn has to tell us. So here we go. Let's begin. And Wolfie, I guess, we'll run A1. You're going to hear Sir Anthony Hopkins talking to, I think, Jeffrey Wright. They are the two of the great minds behind this project of creating sentient androids, androids who at least can represent themselves as human beings to people who've paid a lot of money to do things that they're not really allowed to do to human beings. Here we go.
So our creatures have been misbehaving. You haven't yet isolated the bug. That's so unlike you, Bernard. Unless, of course, you have and are simply embarrassed by the result.
It's the code you added, sir. The reveries. It has some
mistakes. Is the word you're too embarrassed to use. You ought not to be a product of a trillion of them. The evolution forged the entirety of sentient life on this planet using only one tool. The mistake.
I flattered myself we were taking a more disciplined approach here. I suppose self-delusion is a gift of natural selection as well.
Indeed it is. But of course, we've managed to slip evolution's leash now, haven't we? We can cure any disease, keep even the weakest of us alive, and one fine day, perhaps we shall even resurrect the dead, call forth Lazarus from his cave. you know what that means? It means that we're done. That this is as good as we're gonna get. It also means that you must indulge me the occasional mistake.
Including eating the liver of a robot. Some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
All right, so this is the kind of intellectual speechiness that occasionally interrupts lots of scenes of people doing bad things to one another and quite a few naked actresses who are pretending to be naked androids. Pedro, you know, it does seem to me, a few weeks ago we talked about the Netflix series Stranger Things, which also struck me as this kind of layer cake of a lot of cultural references. And, of course, as you watch this one, you see, first of all, every Western you ever saw in your life. But then you can sort of see Jurassic Park and AI and Blade Runner and Ex Machina. And I'm increasingly worried that I'm never going to see an original piece of culture again. I'm just going to see these kinds of averagings of previous culture. I don't know. But are they getting at something original here? Is there enough? You've watched, I think, more of it than any of us have. We won't spoil anything for you out there. Don't worry.
I'll try not to.
But I don't know. Is there enough that's new?
I think that one luxury about having episodic television on HBO with an unlimited budget is that I think from what I've seen so far, I think they're going somewhere and we'll see where they're going. But up to now, it's definitely – I mean one of my favorite shows is Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. And this just has lots of Battlestar Galactica feelings kind of vibing out of it. And I think that let's see what the whole season looks like. I think at the end of this, it will be binge watched and that will tell the whole story. But I think there's a chance that they might go somewhere original.
I'm just going to stay with you for a second on that because I saw Battlestar Galactica mm-hmm. stuff there too. And, of course, one of the things that happens in Battlestar Galactica is that there's this race of supposedly mm-hmm. predatory or at least destructive artificial life forms known as Cylons. And the notional beginning of the series is that they are out to destroy humankind and that humankind is absolutely worth saving at any cost. And right. as the many seasons go on, we start to have some questions about that. The humans sometimes don't behave any better than the horrible Cylons. They're aggressive. They're paranoid. They're destructive. And I mean, this particular series actually, I can swing this over to Carolyn. This particular series takes a kind of a dim view of human beings, especially male human beings so far.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I didn't like it at all. It was a struggle for me to get through the one episode. So I give you credit, Pedro, for really pushing through there. I was so relieved that we only had to watch the one. I was also relieved when I went online. I turned to the internet because after watching the episode, I was kind of I had so many questions and I was a little bit lost. And I was glad to see that it wasn't that I had missed something or was under the influence of cold medication and just completely dropped the ball on the plot. But I think the first episode especially is meant to set you up to be confused, but also have these visceral reactions to the violence and the sex that is happening in this very kind of confusing way that people are. I just couldn't wrap my mind around this because of how evil they're setting up the humans to be. But then I didn't like it. I don't want to give away anything without – I don't want to ruin it in case people want to watch it and not have my tainted view on it.
Well, setting up the humans to be evil, to be sure, and I think that we're going to see an awful lot of evil human behavior. Mm-hmm. That's what this whole world is about. But – there were a lot of questions raised for me. I mean, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of the series. But all I could do when thinking about preparing for the show is nitpick the crap out of it because there's all these little inconsistencies and things. I mean, I see Jurassic Park more than I see anything else in this. And my very first thought is that if Anthony Hopkins had played the John Hammond character in Jurassic Park, how much better a movie that would have been and how much creepier and weirder that world would have been.
True.
Not the kids yeah. running around, but like a real adult Jurassic Park with a creepy Dr. Moreau at the center. Mm-hmm. I love that idea anyway. But there are a lot of holes in it that I hope are going to be filled in afterward. I hope, Colin, by the end, it's not just a morality play about the robots mm-hmm. being more human than the humans, because that will feel very very disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Right. The robots are so human in so many ways and so aware in so many ways that at times it doesn't really feel like it's about robots. It just feels like it's about people with post-traumatic stress syndrome, which is a major plot device here, and people who've had horrible things happen to them. Although, Pedro, the other thing I started thinking about today is that in some ways, and if I'm right about this, they are – then my hat is off to them. That one of the things they're really doing is just talking about how we talk about anybody. And I started thinking about, you know, Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind sort of presupposes that slaves like being slaves, right? That they're okay with this, basically. Slaves are – particularly the good slaves, the happy slaves, mm-hmm. you know. And, I mean, it really doesn't imagine for a moment that slaves could have some interior life where they weren't all that happy about it, or that there's anything in the world worth saving except the great chivalrous South, you know. And of course, most Westerns presuppose the same thing about Native Americans, you know, that basically they don't really have interior lives. They're fodder in one way or another. And so, I mean, if that's what they're doing with the androids here, then I'm thinking, well, that's a different kind of morality story and maybe kind of an interesting one.
Well, the interesting thing is that the creator of the whole world, Anthony Hopkins' character, that's what he thinks that these robots have no interior life. In fact, he admonishes Jeffrey Wright at some point in a possibly future episode to stop thinking that. And but you see Jeffrey Wright being set up as the opposite, is trying to probe into the interior lives of these androids. And so I do think that there is something there where, obviously, I think right now if you're going with a show and you have it set up that the creator really thinks that these are really just dolls to be used by humanity, and then you have, you know, his chief scientist maybe thinking otherwise, I think they're going to be setting things up and maybe going in that direction that
you
mentioned.
It was that point that I became fixated with the acting mm-hmm. in this, the actors playing the androids, just mm-hmm. as from an actor standpoint, that is just such a fascinating role. And the actor who plays the father in the first episode,
yes.
mm-hmm. There were a couple of shots of these close-ups of his eyes. And I actually rewound it to relook at his eyes and the expression because I was so fascinated how he would find exactly. I thought that he was a standout to me in mm-hmm. how he portrayed this character having his memory wiped, but there's still the buildup of a past character that he had embodied in there, and then kind of facing having his memory wiped and then being sent out into this void filled with all these other empty androids. I found his performance in that moment to be one of the most mm-hmm. fascinating moments to me, just right. from an actor standpoint.
Well, one of the premises of the show, once again, we will not wreck anything. We won't spoil anything for you. But so one of the reasons that some of these robots or androids are having problems, they're malfunctioning, part of it seems to be that their memories aren't entirely wiped. And as mm-hmm. somebody else said, their memories are kind of a palimpsest. You know, there are sort of things that have been erased and replaced with other things, but not completely erased. And that's all sort of slopping around there to produce a form of self-consciousness, or at least a consciousness that doesn't entirely do the bidding of their corporate masters. And yeah, I do think those scenes where they're reprogramming one of the androids, and the android is kind of being asked to shift through a whole mm-hmm. series of subroutines and levels of consciousness, there's some pretty interesting acting. But, you know, John, and this is a highly unoriginal observation with me, but one of the things that we sort of – there's three groups of people that we're meeting here. We're meeting this group of androids. We're meeting this group of, for the most part, you know, vulgar and ugly tourists who are there to shoot things that look like people or rape things that look like people. And then we meet sort of the middle management there. There's the you know, there's the godlike Sir Anthony Hopkins, and Jeffrey Wright is playing his number two. But then there are all these other people who are involved in putting on this thing. We're going to hear a little clip here. This is the amazing Danish actress Sidse Babett Knudsen. She's talking to Simon Quatermain. She's kind of a corporate weasel of some kind, we think, anyway, and then he's a creative weasel who's been putting together the storylines here.
The problem's been resolved.
There should never have been an update in the first place. Ford and Bernard keep making the things more lifelike, but does anyone truly want that? Do you want to think that your husband is really f***ing that beautiful girl, or that you really just shot someone? This place works because the guests know the hosts aren't real.
So what exactly are you suggesting?
Stop the updates altogether. Maybe even roll them back a bit, make the hosts more manageable.
Lobotomies tend to do that.
And so, I mean, my highly unoriginal observation is that this is in many ways what an allegory for putting for making an HBO series. You've got to hit some kind of sweet spot of yeah, sex right. and violence and character development and adventure and with a few speeches by Sir Anthony Hopkins about the, you know, the philosophy of mind. And that's what they're doing. I mean, characters are doing the thing that we're watching.
Yeah. Yes. And I think to a certain extent they're doing it very well, and it's been created so as to hit all those sweet spots that we would come to expect from an HBO drama of this type. The reason I went so quickly to picking apart the parts of this world is because I grew up with a father who read science fiction voluminously, and I ended up reading quite a bit of it myself. And so I tend to look for plot holes and stuff like this. Even just the speech that we just heard about the updates and whether or not they want the robots, the hosts, to look too realistic or not. There are so many occasions in even this first episode where the guests, the people who paid quite a bit of money there, step in and break through a wall that they know they can break through. They just shoot someone dead, and they disrupt this very intricate storyline that has been, you know, created with all of these very expensive androids. And then they gloat and they say, "Look at what I did! I shot a robot. Let's go get a drink." And there is kind of a sense that if there's not a bit of fear for the humans in this, if there's no fear that mm-hmm. you're going to be harmed, how long could this possibly play out? Either as a series, like how much could I watch this, but also just as an entertainment if I were in that moment. I mean, I'd be like, okay, first time I shot somebody, well, there you go, did that, and then you move on. It seems potentially to not be as interesting a question that they're raising. I really want to see how it plays out because I'm worried about that.
Right. And once again, this is no spoiler, but Pedro, you've ridden your horse further out to the boundaries
yes.
of Westworld than any of the rest of us. You're like 3.4 episodes, and I think at this point I've only done two. But it's already in two. There's clear that there's going to be some mythology to all this, that there's a world beyond the world. We see this. It's being probed by this fairly loathsome character played by Ed Harris, who's been visiting Westworld for 30 years. And you know, just like John is suggesting, the thrill of shooting and raping people, although I guess it still has its moments for him, it's wearing a little thin. He'd like to know what this really is. And I think that's maybe the thing that's going to keep this going if it works.
Yeah, and actually that's the one thing that was going around over each episode in my head was exactly, you know, the hosts. So in Westworld, the patrons can't be harmed really in any way. So they're basically, you're playing a video game in invincible mode. And Ed Harris obviously takes that to his advantage to sort of try to break the game, which is intriguing, although he's just such a terrible and dark character. It'll be interesting to see if he's being set up for some comeuppance or if he's going to be, you know, kind of like a Game of Thrones bad guy that, you know, it'll be a few more seasons till he gets his end. Well,
Game of Drones.
So here's my question. So he's been coming there for 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to Vegas and they don't like the way you play the table games, they boot you out. Right. After the first time, if maybe you go there for a couple, right. they get to know you and they see you at the door and they're like, "Sir, we don't really need your business anymore." The idea that he would be coming here for 30 years and there's cameras everywhere and they're seeing, I assume, and yeah. they're seeing what he's doing, but yet somehow no one has put a stop to him or invalidated his Westworld, you know, VIP card is somewhat, doesn't really resonate with me. I can't
high
get
roller.
Around that.
Yeah,
he's
yeah
and
they, that, need, that's, they need his money. Well, how many people are rushing to go party with androids yeah. in the old Wild West?
They touch upon that in a future episode very briefly as to why he can do what he can do. But,
yeah, I, even in the second episode, there's at least a moment where yeah. they do say he gets to do whatever he wants to do. I mean, yeah. maybe he is literally that high roller who gets right. comped, who gets put up with for lots of other things. So Carolyn, we have to share this one part of it because Carolyn is on the receiving end of various casting notices and things like that as an actress. So quite a while back, a call went forth through all the land for some performers who could play these roles. And I think you're no stranger to completely bizarre and insulting and degrading casting notices, but this one was kind of special.
Yeah, absolutely. A casting went out last fall when they were filming Westworld, where they were looking for extras, which is a non-speaking background role that, you know, you're just one of the masses. And they were looking for extras who then would be willing to be in a scene where they'd be having an orgy. They had to be naked. They had to be simulating all sorts of sexual situations and maybe even have their genitals painted. And this, they had to sign this waiver. And
let me just read it. The explicit consent form warns that the performer, quote, may be required to perform genital-to-genital touching, simulate oral sex with hand-to-genital touching, contort to form a table-like shape while being fully nude, pose on all fours while others who are fully nude ride on your back and ride on someone else's back while you are both fully nude. Less strenuously, others simply, quote, might have to have their genitals painted. I'm just assuming usually it just says you might have to do a lot of sexually degrading stuff, not you might have to make a table or something. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I would have read this casting notice and posted it online mocking it and never submitted. I would have been like, I'm all set without simulating a table and have something riding me while our genitals touch and be getting only the minimum daily rate for it.
I just have to – my favorite part of what Colin just read is that my parents got evacuated from South Carolina. They're coming up to stay with us tonight. Hi, Mom. Thanks for listening. Right. Anyway.
It's actually, yes, to John's parents, this is apparently the way IKEA is now, too. So if he takes you down there, don't touch the tables unless you're really sure what they're made out of. But, I mean, you know, I mean, so that's – we laugh about that. But, I mean, Pedro, HBO has sort of figured out what we like, right? We like Game of Thrones and we like stuff like this. We don't want it in a way that makes us feel completely venal. You know, we like it when it has some intellectual window dressing to it. So, I mean, that to me, that's one of the jokes of this thing, is that all these people behind the scenes are running around trying to make sure this is exactly the kind of thing that their high-rolling customers will like.
Have you gotten to that episode yet?
And we are their we are their high-rolling customers.
The genital painting, I think, has occurred, but in terms of
those lucky actors,
yeah, exactly. You know, I think that, yeah, you're right. It's like the show within a show. Let's see how far we can take this and make it explicit and graphic, but yet put the veneer of Sir Anthony Hopkins and Jeffrey Wright wrapped over this. You know, I think that that's what HBO does. I think the interesting thing with this show is that in the Westworld part, it's just – it is so dark and bleak that if the people in Westworld, if the guests keep doing what they're doing episode after episode after episode, you know, it's going to wear out. It's going to be just too much to watch.
Yeah, and that's what I sort of already worry about. It's part of – it's a game that seems like it's already at the end of being interesting right now. And so can we sustain this? I will just say I don't know, Colin, if you had meant to bring this up. As Jen and I were watching it, and this – I read about it later on. We're watching the one saloon scene, and she's like, what is that song playing? There's a song playing in the background. And she says
Black Hole Sun
from Soundgarden, which is kind of hilarious to me, because I'm thinking, how far in the future is it that they would have this technology? Mm-hmm. So we're assuming that they would remember what a cowboy western is like, which I assume is still a thing that we would talk about. And then of all of the songs in the world, that they would pull out a Soundgarden song from 1992.
They also use Paint It Black.
Paint It Black.
Yeah. Paint It Black is in the canon, I suppose. Yeah. I don't know that Black Hole Sun quite got there.
But when we say they use Painted Black, part of it, they use this sort of Copeland-like orchestration.
It's quite lovely,
Western orchestration.
I thought the music was the best part to me, the background
I just thought that little
music.
Inside joke was funny. And I guess there's Radiohead and there's other songs that end up in here.
Yeah, every episode, I think, the morning when Westworld kind of wakes up, the piano, I think, is queued up.
I found myself Googling if I could download the player piano version of Black Hole Sun.
That would be great.
Yeah, you can't yet, but somebody should get on it.
Carolyn's ringtone next week.
Things are always available, sooner or later. That's the age we live in. All right, we should probably take a break here. Westworld, it's on HBO. 3/4 of it, I think, like it. One of us does not and is not going to be watching any future episodes. So we'll be back. We'll talk about another kind of dehumanization. Yeah, more human than human. One of the challenges of doing a show like this one on public radio is that we often talk about things that people who listen to public radio explicitly come to public radio to avoid having anyone talk to them about. That came up a few weeks ago with the Brangel exit from Brangelina, and it's going to come up again now because we're going to talk about Kim Kardashian, who you've gone to considerable trouble to avoid in your life. But Kim Kardashian, as you probably know, was robbed at gunpoint in Paris not all that long ago. It was Sunday night. She was inside a luxury Paris apartment. Two masked men dressed as police officers, this is all sort of according to multiple reports, burst in, held up the star in her room, tied her up, and took a ring worth about 4 million euros, which is about $4.5 million these days, and a bunch of other jewelry worth maybe a sort of an equivalent amount. I'm not exactly sure. A lot of money, a lot of jewelry was taken, very expensive. Ms. Kardashian West's spokesman told AP that not long after the star's husband, Kanye West, abruptly walked off stage as he performed his song Heartless at a music festival in Queens because he'd heard about this this horrible emergency. So, you know, there is a way in which, and John Dankosky was, I think, the one who kind of got us down this path, that there's what we call in the nose a Papoulian through line from Westworld to Kim Kardashian, in the sense anyway that Kim Kardashian looks a little bit like some of the so-called hosts and the androids on Westworld. And, you know, I mean, on Westworld, they're constantly saying the visitor, the tourists will say, if they're not sure, are you real? To one of the people who's serving them or encountering them out in the West. And there's a way in which, as you pointed out, Kim Kardashian has ceased to be real. Take it.
Well, and a friend of mine shared a story with the simple headline, The Abject Dehumanization of Kim Kardashian, and it outlines some of the horrific things that people say in social media in the wake of the story coming out. Here's someone who's robbed at gunpoint. She's a famous person, and she would assume to have a lot of protection, bodyguards, etc. She flaunts her wealth on social media constantly. There are multiple television programs about her life, and people have formed an opinion, which I think we'll talk about in a little bit, about her, even if they don't know anything about her. I have no opinion on Kim Kardashian personally. I can't name another Kardashian. I don't know anything about the Jenner family. I actually downloaded a few Kanye songs this morning specifically to prepare for this, which I think is, you know, gets me a little bit of something here.
Yeah, this is your Joseph Gordon-Levitt type, you know, method stuff that you're doing.
But at the end of the day, just because you have a famous person who is famous for the sake of being famous, who flaunts her wealth and may be distasteful to a lot of people, the notion that she or anybody could be treated in such a dehumanizing way on social media, that we could strip out any human instinct toward empathy is quite – I don't know. It's not shocking anymore, but it's a bit disgusting. And maybe because she is who she is, it just rises to a different level. I mean, she's the one who nobody should be able to care what happens. But I kind of do, and I feel bad for her, and I really, really wish that people would back the hell off on social media.
So, Carolyn, you may be more likely to watch a future episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians than to watch a future episode of Westworld. Maybe I'm assuming a lot.
That's a fair assumption. I don't watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I want to go on the record as saying this. I have caught a few episodes. I have friends who watch it. Kim Kardashian and her clan are such – have created such caricatures of people that I understand how hard it is to kind of relate to them on any level just because of the lifestyle they lead or what their concerns are versus real world concerns for you. But I do think when I heard this, and then I heard Karl Lagerfeld, the head of Chanel, that he pretty much attacked her by saying, well, it's her fault she had this coming. Because she posted her whereabouts and her wealth, and people wanted to, quote, share it. And I was really jarred by that because that was the same as slut shaming. That's like saying that a woman got raped because she was wearing a short skirt. You just shouldn't say that. So that actually, just hearing that kind of attack from somebody who is sort of in that circle with her and is allegedly friends with the family did make me feel more sympathy for someone that, yes, my first instinct was to kind of laugh and think, you know, oh, well, too bad for her. But there it did kind of – it humanized her more to me to see how people were reacting to this. That made me feel more bad for her.
Well, the I don't know. Actually, Pedro and I were both mildly interested in talking today about the outing of Elena Ferrante. And you could almost make this little wobbly connection between these two things. It's not a genuine Papoulian through line. But there's a way in which what Kim Kardashian is being told, I think, when she's being insulted by Karl Lagerfeld or by trolls, is you brought yourself to market. You know, mm-hmm. You placed yourself in the hands of a market that's no longer required to exercise any normal amounts of human sympathy towards you because, in fact, you've auctioned yourself off to us in this particular manner. And I don't know. I mean, I think maybe that my reflex was to think that this wasn't even real. It was part of some kind of storyline.
And now it just keeps getting more and more bizarre. Yeah. Now they're saying the Pink Panthers, who are this great ring of jewel thieves that are apparently very high end. I mean, it just sounds like a 1960s caper movie at this point.
No, I totally think the short British guy with the British accent in Westworld is now writing everything, including this. but I don't know. I think John and Carolyn make a good point, which is it doesn't really work to our best interest to dehumanize anybody, including Kim Kardashian.
No, I think that's really true, and I think part of it is the internet has worn down the empathy centers in our minds, and I think one of the getting a little bit higher on this, I think that our rage at a Kim Kardashian and having $10 million disappear is also a proxy for inequality as well, and I think that there's a lot of that playing in. The interesting thing is that if this had been sort of the heiress of a CEO who had been robbed, I think there wouldn't be the shaming or anything of this. But because I think that vast, vast inequality is also very hidden away. I know Chris Rock said if people saw how the wealthiest 1% actually live, there'd be riots in the street. And so I think the fact that she's showing how the rich actually live to some degree. And so I think that you kind of throw that into the whole mix as well.
And that's the thing is if it were a riot in the streets mm-hmm. about inequality, if it were a riot in the streets about celebrities that flaunt something that millions of other people combined would not ever be able to achieve, that's one thing. But this is a jewel heist. It's an act of violence against, a person. Yeah. And mm-hmm. in as much as people don't want to think of her as that. I will just say quickly, as part of my extensive research for this program, I started looking a little bit into, some of the controversies that Kanye West has been involved in. And, it's hard sometimes to feel bad for that family when you see the way in which they attempted to paper over some very misogynistic lyrics about Taylor Swift in a song called Famous from earlier this year. Mm-hmm. It's pretty ugly stuff, and it's exactly the sort of stuff that, frankly, starts people down the road of saying some of the things on social media they say about women an awful lot when you, Mr. West, say it in your lyrics. But there you have it.
All right. So John and I probably will have to deal with one or two emails, maybe not too many more than that, from people who think that we shouldn't be talking about Kimye at all. To preempt as many of those as we can, we're going to devote a minute to Mike Pesca on his wonderful podcast, The Gist. We love Mike Pesca. We love The Gist. He did a segment called I Interviewed Kim Kardashian for NPR, and listeners revolted. Here's why they're wrong.
I think most NPR listeners liked it. But the people who commented on the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me webpage, they were not amused. Here, listen to some of these actual comments. So disappointed. NPR's my sanctuary, and now it has been sullied by the vapid Kim Kardashian. Or so dismayed that she has infiltrated my favorite podcast. Here, come, meet me on the fainting couch. Contaminated through the speakers. But let me tell you what is going on. There is a type of NPR listener, and it's a type of media consumer, goes way beyond NPR, that defines themselves by what they are not. To some extent, we all do this, the bands we like, the foods we don't eat. But with them, it's a much huger deal. They're close-minded. They use affiliation with NPR or Fox or Christian Broadcasting, not to experience a larger outside world, but to congratulate themselves on the purity of their own world. Insularity does not wind up being an unfortunate byproduct of striving for equality. It is the point of the choice in the first place.
I just want to say, first of all, that was wonderful. And second of all, Pedro, I mean, this sort of, you know, this is something we wrestle with when we get ready to do the nose and we're bringing up stuff like this. But it seems to me that I'm sort of in John's boat that I don't really have a lot of familiarity with the Kardashians, but I don't wear that as a badge of honor. I feel like that's an area of my culture I don't understand. And I probably would understand a lot of things going on right now, including this election cycle, better if I understood the Kardashians.
I think I agree with that. I mean, I'm not on the Kardashians are not on my radar either in terms of things that happen to them or that don't. But I think that – I mean, I think one of the things that's happening in our social media saturated world is that, you know, you are channeled to kind of positively reinforce the things that you like every day. And so at some point, you know, I think for a lot of people, there becomes sort of this nice little warm bubble of all the nice things. So when something pops that, I think a lot of people are maybe becoming more insular, more insulated into their bubbles than even they may realize.
Yeah. And people who watch things like Game of the Thrones feeling pretty good about themselves. That would be me. That would be me. But we're too good to watch the Kardashians. All right. You know what? We're going to have to segue to our final topic here, and we're going to start it off with Carolyn because she kind of is our favorite topic. This favorite topic anyway. You had an experience, a not very pleasant experience at the Big E. I'm going to first of all give you all trigger warnings or whatever it's called these days. Carolyn is going to use an unpleasant word that was actually used towards her companion at the Big E. So brace yourselves.
All right. So last weekend, I went to the Big E with my roommate and kinetic dance principal dancer, Alex Arlengo. And Alex is gay, and he is one of those people who loves being gay. And, you know, that is just who he is. And we were on the midway, and a man running one of the carnival game booths was shouting out to people, trying to get them to come and play his plate toss game. And Alex and I just proceeded to keep walking and ignore him. And he called Alex a faggot. And we stopped dead in our tracks, totally just taken aback that we were hearing this. I had never heard that word said out loud in a derogatory manner like that in a real life situation. And it was just shocking. And when we turned around, he said it again. And then we confronted him, and he said that he could say whatever the BP wants, to which I responded, "Well, you can't, sir. You can't at all." And I said, "You cannot call somebody that." And he just kept yelling. And it became clear that having a dialogue with him was useless. But what wasn't going to be useless was to report this, because that is actually something that you can't say. That violates your right to. So we went to the people running the carnival, North American Amusements. We went to their customer service, and we also sought out the police there on the premise. And, you know, we told them what happened, and probably the most amazing group of police officers that you could have found. They were incredibly on top of it. The carnival staff and the Big E staff, everyone rallied around this and proved that you can't say things like that and shouldn't say things like that. And the man was fired and escorted off the premise. So it kind of has this happy ending of justice. But at the same time, realizing that kind of hatred and just this violation of, in a moment where you're just enjoying a carnival and candy apple and cotton candy, and having that just so struck down so hard, so harshly by a word like that, it felt good to have the justice, but at the same time, it was a real wake-up call that this happens. But that you can do something.
Yeah, to me, Peter, that's the – I mean, look, I'm not surprised to find out that this happens. But I am surprised to find out that there are steps that you can take, and people take those steps.
Yeah, I think that's the best part of the story, is that Carolyn actually managed to say this is a problem, went to people, told them this is a problem, went to the police, said that this is a problem. Everyone actually agreed,
yeah.
And actually made the situation right and dismissed this person. And I think it's important. I think that people know that actually is something that happened and that can happen.
I mean, I'm a more confrontational person by nature than I think some people are, and I also have this need for justice. And part of it was driven in this, seeing Alex's face when this happened. Mm-hmm. I feel like anybody would have felt, I need to do something. And the something that you can do is to seek out people to talk to and find help and stop the situation, stop this cycle. And I think that that's the important thing, is to know that you don't have to be a victim, that you don't have to sit back and take this when you see this happening to those around you.
I was just struck, Carolyn, when you were just telling the story, that you said that you'd never heard that term yelled at someone in a derogatory way before.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit older than you are. And it's something that used to happen all the time. When I was on this program talking about the show Stranger Things, I said one of my nitpicks about that program was that the language that the 12-year-old boys used wasn't exactly right, because 12-year-old boys use words like that all the time in every other sentence back in 1983. But the fact is that we don't anymore. You can't anymore. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't. And that you would grow up to be an adult now and have that not be a part of your life doesn't mean that an awful lot of people, especially gay people in America right now, don't hear that all the time. But the fact is, it is so much less a part of what we do casually, and it is so actionable when done publicly, that this story really does tell us something about how quickly the culture changed over the course of the last 10 years or so. And it really is maybe 10 years, because I remember that being something that the cops wouldn't have done a damn thing.
Yeah.
Although, well, yeah, my initial thought when Carolyn said that was that she's never played basketball. But
certainly not on a playground.
But yes, I also think, you know, I mean, I see stuff on social media all the time that's still like this. In fact, there was a guy I kind of know, and he's even been in the audience for one of our live audience things and talked on the air. He was talking about soccer players, and that was the way that he wanted to demean and characterize them. He used that exact word. There are a bunch of those things because, you know, and obviously those things are no good at all, or lack, you know, whatever kind of fortitude he's ascribing to hockey players. I think.
But you curdle at that. I mean, everyone curdles at that now. And it was something that it was, whether it was on the basketball court or in the playground, it was something that it was not – it didn't cause any disruption.
Well, I say good for the Big E anyway. I might have thought that the Big E would be one of the places that you couldn't get social justice.
Even more so was the traveling carnival, the North American amusements. They are not based in, you know, they are not like a Northeast-based carnival company.
I don't know that carny culture is well known for that sort of tolerance
they
display.
And one of the most beautiful moments in the justice of this was when the head of the traveling carnival shook Alex's hand and said, I want you to know that this does not reflect our values.
That really is great. I would have said, I should reword what I said. I would have said that you could not get social justice there unless it had been deep fried first. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back. There's no escape, there's no excuse. So just suck up and be nice. Be nice.
People are so upset about Elena Ferrante. It's probably the wrong time to mention that Thomas Pynchon is really Joe Buck. Today's show was produced by Jonathan McPants and me, Kyone Wolf. Greg Hill appeared with us in the intro, and the part of Bill Curry was played by Sir Anthony Hopkins. Never miss an episode. Subscribe to The Colin McEnroe Show on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. On Monday, a special post-debate scramble. And now, back to Colin.
You can always get John Dinkowski to laugh at a Joe Buck joke, even if it's not even a very good one. So we're going to do some recommendations, endorsements, those kinds of things. Carolyn Payne, while you're nursing your cold out of your body, what are you endorsing?
I don't really feel it needs an endorsement necessarily, but I'm going to endorse Nightfall, which is tomorrow night in Elizabeth Park in the West End. I have been a part of this show, and I have been an audience member for this show, and it is beautiful, and everyone should go. It's free. It's just a wonderful celebration of arts and humanities in this city.
Yeah, this is an incredible concatenation of dance and song and puppetry and kinetic sculptures and other stuff that we can't easily describe. Both Wolfie and I and Carolyn worked on the very first Nightfall that was in Elizabeth Park, and it's going back there now. Pedro, what about you?
I am endorsing good old New Haven, and it's having citywide open studios which are being held every weekend through October. And there'll be more than 350 artists. And each weekend, it's sort of a movable feast where it goes to a different location in the city over the weekend. And so my area of Westville, I believe, is tomorrow and Sunday, which will be a lot of fun. And I think the theme this year is Game On, so there'll be some interactive art exhibits and things. And it's a great way to see sections of the city and to see New Haven in general. So come on down.
I'll second that one, too. And I've been to some areas of New Haven that I wouldn't have been to otherwise, these kind of semi-abandoned factories in which studios have cropped up. I couldn't even describe exactly where they are, except they're not far from 91. I know that. All right.
And there's a really cool interactive piece that that is happening at the Armory that I was very, very interested in and that I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to, but it sounds very, very cool. I was also going to just say quickly about Nightfall. When people ask me about why do you like Hartford, why do you love Hartford, go do this thing. Go sit in a park with thousands of people from all over the city and all over the suburbs. And there's giant puppets, and there's amazing music, and there's just a feeling in the air that something amazing is happening. It's happening, in, you know, with all these people around, with the crisp air. I also want to say one other quick artistic thing. A friend of mine, Daniel Mailer, the painter, who lives out in the Litchfield Hills, is just putting the finishing touches on a beautiful mural on the back end of one of the terrible buildings that wrecked downtown Torrington many decades ago. They tore out the heart of downtown and they turned it into kind of a strip mall. So half the town is still this quaint Art Deco beautiful place that's struggling a bit. And the other half of town is just this strip mall ugliness with a 99 restaurant. Well, the brick wall that is the back of that strip mall faces the rest of the city, and it's looked terrible for years. And Danielle and a team of students and artists have put a beautiful mural on that that brightens up the entire city. It runs along the Naugatuck River, and I encourage you to just go to Torrington and take a look, and you can check her out online too.
All right. I mentioned a Danish actress named Citza Babett Knudsen. She's in Westworld. I think some of her lines she's had to reloop because it didn't come out that well with the Danish accent maybe. But she's fabulous, and she's best known for a series called Borgen. I may have talked about it here before. It's kind of House of Cards, but in Denmark. And it's not House of Cards because it really is more a little bit how government works. It's more plausibly what government is really like. She plays the prime minister, the newly elected prime minister of Denmark. And I have to say, I've watched maybe, if there's four seasons, I've watched three of them, and then I kind of got tired out on Danish public policy. But but she's riveting in that, and I'm guessing she's going to be riveting in everything she does, and Borgen is certainly very engrossing and worth your time if you can track it down somehow. I'm going to endorse a show similar to The Nose called the Slate Culture Gabfest. This week's episode, which its headliner is Westworld. They're talking about Westworld as well. But there's this terrific fight that happens over the outing of Elena Ferrante. Like, it's a really big fight. And, you know, you don't hear that often. And the people having the fight, Julia Turner and Stephen Metcalf, are both very, very smart people. And they're getting annoyed with each other, but they're also saying really interesting things about all this. And you just realize you kind of don't hear that often. You know, you don't hear people really doing a knockdown drag out, and it's done very well. I mean, if you don't like to hear mom and dad fighting, maybe don't listen to it because it could be. And then the last thing I'll quickly endorse is something that Carolyn sent to all of us apropos of her Big E experience, and that is The Daily Show recently did a thing where they did a fake barbecue truck in North Carolina, in Raleigh, I believe, in North Carolina, in which two of their comedians basically turned away people who came up and said, well, no, we're not going to serve you because you're gay. Many of the people insisted that they weren't gay, and various arguments ensued, and this doesn't sound very funny, but it really was very, very funny. And then lessons learned. There were hugs, there were lessons, there were laughs. So track that one down, The Daily Show's fake barbecue truck. Thanks to John Dankosky, Pedro Soto, and Carolyn Payne. And we'll be back on Monday with The Scramble.
And I reckon you don't have the nerve to...
To what? Look you in the eye and pull the trigger?
You see that sunset? You won't see what's after it.
I always did like the night. The darkness reminds me.
What happened this time?
Sorry. This one's solar powered.